It's the end of 1929. The world has just been hit by a stock market crash that will lead to the Great Depression. Folks don't know what they'll do or what their futures will look like. Around this same time, an eccentric man and his wife, George and Florence Daner, arrive in Vineland, New Jersey. It's a small town about an hour west of Atlantic City. For $4, George buys a plot of land that was basically a junkyard. There's car parts, debris, and a bunch of other things that people had thrown out. But as the saying goes, one man's trash is another man's treasure. So George takes all of that junk and builds a palace, a place filled with mystery, treasures, and stories that would be embedded in the walls for a lifetime. I'm Zoe Rose, and this is Atlas Obscura, a celebration of the world's strange, incredible, and wondrous places. Today, we will explore all of what this Palace of Depression had to offer, and all of its secrets and untold mysteries. It's a story that involves an eccentric hustler, some big-time promotional stunts, and even the FBI. All that and more after this. The Palace of Depression has been a tourist attraction for decades, but by the time Steve Medio got involved with it, it had lost some of its glory.
It was a hole in the ground with a whole bunch of sand around it and some foundations, more like footings, but I will call it the foundation in the ground. And that was my introduction to the Palace of Depression around 2003 or four.
Steven is from Vineland and would visit the junkyard-turned-man-made palace in high school. In fact, he would volunteer there. Now,
I am currently the president of the Palace of Depression Restoration Association.
The Palace of Depression had been a legend long before Stephen came upon it.
The stories were, well, there was this really unique, most people said weird guy, who built this house out of junk. And it was a really neat thing, and people would stop on the way from usually the city, on the way to the shore, and they would stop here and get a tour. And that was about the extent of it.
The house people would see was modest in size. It resembles a cottage with stone walls. It's been referred to as a mosaic castle and fascinated visitors because of its junky materials. George called his masterpiece the Palace of Depression, as a testament to the times he was living in, the Great Depression. Clearly, George had a vision, and he brought it to life. But who was he really?
I think he was an eccentric person, very creative, very skilled. He had to be very skilled and artistic and intelligent to do what he did. I also think he had some flaws, and I say that because it appeared that he would do anything to get people to come and see his creation, and that landed him in jail for lying to the FBI.
Yes, jail. FBI. We'll explain in a second.
That was an issue. But yeah, I think he was neat. So he would be giving people tours, and he would make up stories, and he would say things that fit in with the time, kind of creative things that he came up with that was very of his time to get interest, you know?
Despite the oddities of his backstory, George Daner was skilled in many different ways. It's not clear how George ended up in Vineland, New Jersey, but Stephen offered a few theories.
He says that an angel came to him in a dream and inspired him to come here and build the Palace of Depression out of junk and to show everyone that he could do it and that they could do it too, to inspire people.
One of his most colorful stories was about how he'd made a fortune as a gold miner during the Klondike Rush, only to lose it all before coming east to build his curious monument out of junk.
But it's hard for me to believe that he went from a gold miner in Alaska, lost it all, and came to Vineland, New Jersey, sight unseen, to build the Palace of Depression. But that is just the story he told.
What truly made the Palace of Depression stand apart was George's remarkable ability to attract attention. His creativity wasn't just in the building, but he used different artifacts to structure the house to make sure the palace was a must-see attraction.
Yeah, so he used car fenders and car parts like that as archways. He built, you know, like a castle spire. He had a door that entered, and it's a large round door, and he had a turtle shell. He called it the turtle shell door, and it would spin and allow you to walk through it. Then going down, he had his sunset kitchen, and he called it that because he had a mural of a sunset in the kitchen. He had the New Jersey Devil's Den, and that's where the Jersey Devil would stay when the Jersey Devil visited the palace, because, of course, Jersey Devil would visit him, right?
The Jersey Devil is a local legendary creature said to inhabit a forest in South Jersey. Though never shown to be real, it's no surprise that George Daner would have claimed the Jersey Devil stopped by to pay a visit to the palace. Over the years, George Daner's stunts became more extravagant, each designed to pull more visitors to the palace. He would fabricate wild stories, concocting tales to keep the public intrigued and visitors coming. As the popularity of the location grew, so did the stunts. But perhaps he took it too far when the kidnapping stunt happened.
So that was the downfall of the palace. What happened was there was an announcement, it was all around the U.S., there was a kidnapping of a young child, and he immediately contacted the authorities and said that the kidnappers had come to the palace and wanted him to hide the child and them, and that in exchange, they would split the ransom with him. And it turned out the FBI determined he was lying, and a prosecutor decided that they would prosecute. Now, my thought is he did this because he wanted to drum up publicity. He wanted people to hear and read about in the newspapers. He wanted people who were up on current events to read about the palace and then get interested and come. But it's likely because he needed some money and he wanted some tours and things were waning. So he lied and got prosecuted. He went to jail. And that was the beginning of the end, because when he went to jail, the land and the palace was abandoned.
By the time George was released from jail, he was too old to maintain the palace anymore and eventually ended up in a nursing home.
And I actually was able to interview a nurse who cared for him there. And by that time, they just said he was kind of just like any other person. He had stories and things like that, but he was just an old man, sort of tired, you know?
George passed away a couple years later in 1964 at the age of 104.
And then when he died, he didn't have anything, which goes back to his story that, you know, rags to riches. He lived in a palace, and yet he died and went to the pauper cemetery.
But the Palace of Depression never truly disappeared. It became a legend. And in recent years, a new generation has taken it upon themselves to restore it with a couple of modern upgrades.
Okay, the biggest difference is concrete. We mixed all of the concrete and we made mortar. And having mortar versus George just having dirt and clay is a huge difference in longevity for the palace. As far as look, I'd say it's pretty close. Did we change a few features? Yes, like George had stairs on the outside. We moved ours inside. But generally speaking, we tried to have the same features. We have pictures of the original and our own. It's pretty close, not bad.
And it's once again open for the public for tours. The renovation is not entirely finished.
We still work on it every Tuesday. The main part is done. There's plenty to see. There's plenty more to go.
Through it all, the Palace of Depression still stands for tourists to see all of what this peculiar attraction has to offer. The history and many tales the palace holds will last for a lifetime.
That the vision of a place built out of recycled material / junk is something that still resonates through the generations. And I think that still stands today. We still need housing, we still need shelter, we still need the basics. And depending on how you're going to live, we don't have to have an apartment building or a modern house. You can still get by, as people do throughout the world, in things that they've built themselves. And you can make it kind of nice.
Our podcast is a co-production of Atlas Obscura and Stitcher Studios. The people who make our show include Dylan Thuris, Doug Baldinger, Chris Naka, Camille Stanley, Johanna Mayer, Manolo Morales, Baudelaire, Gabby Gladney, Amanda McGowan, Alexa Lim, Casey Holford, and Luz Fleming. Our theme music is by Sam Tyndall. If you like our show, please give us a good review and rating wherever you get your podcast. And make sure to follow us so you never miss an episode. I'm Zoe Rose, and I'll see you next time.